word education to be specific enough. If you read a book on business, you are gathering information and learning about business. In the strict definition of the word, this is education. Education is essentially a synonym for learning. Yet, in modern society, when people ask if you have an education, what they are really asking is if you went to formal schooling. But formal schooling and learning are not exclusive to each other. So, while Peter is a fan of learning, he is not necessarily a fan of formal education as modern society defines it. The truth is, some people can acquire information and skill in specific areas much quicker by studying information on their own as opposed to formal schooling. While Peter is extremely successful, he still ponders on how he can improve himself. What would he like to improve? Well, this question must first be answered by asking why he hasn't already changed whatever it is he wants to change. This is another example of his deep thinking. For instance, 75% of Americans are overweight. Many of these people, if asked, would like to lose weight, but they fail to ask themselves why they haven't already done so. Clearly, they are gaining pleasure elsewhere by doing what they have been doing. So, to change something, we must change at a secondary level to still receive the pleasure we were receiving from the initial action. For Peter, he states he has had an issue with being overly competitive in the past. Being competitive can increase motivation and effort, therefore resulting in a more successful business, but also create challenges outside of business, like maintaining healthy personal relationships. Peter understands you cannot simply say, okay, let's stop being competitive. Instead, he needs to figure out how he can be even more successful in business while decreasing competitiveness. Just like he stated a moment ago, nowadays you can hear Peter talk about the disadvantages of competition. How if you are competing, you are losing profit. Your goal should be to be early into a sector or develop such a massive improvement over competition that they are no longer competitive with you. Peter is talking about aiming for at least an order of magnitude or a tenfold improvement over the competition. This will allow you to bypass the competition and dominate. Peter believes in constantly seeking the truth. There are many things our society accepts as the reality. As was just mentioned, is formal schooling really the only means of receiving an education? And is it truly necessary, like our society tells us it is? And is this system teaching and preparing us for success in real life in the most efficient and effective way possible? Perhaps yes, perhaps no. The important thing is for you to not merely accept what you are told is truth. Take each of society's conventions and ask yourself, is this true? Is this the best option? Is there a better way? Is this the correct decision for me, and is this what I want in my life? When it comes to starting a business, here are a few questions Peter recommends you ask yourself. 1. Are you in a market where you stand a good chance of developing a monopoly or being a dominant leader? 2. Do you have an advantage which others do not have? This can be IP, resources, or even a superior plan of attack. 3. Do you have the means to distribute your product or service appropriately? Seth Godin. Seth Godin is a best-selling author and entrepreneur worth tens of millions of dollars. Seth believes in the power of specificity and purpose. If someone wants something from you which requires your time, does that thing match your purpose? Of course, it is not bad to spread thin, but do not expect to achieve greatness unless you have a singular focus, and as much of your time as possible should be dedicated to things directly or indirectly related to that purpose. Seth acknowledges that once you have exceeded a minimum income threshold, where you can comfortably afford to eat and support your family, anything beyond that is up to discussion. You can tell yourself anything you want about money. It is just a story. So, if you are going to tell yourself a story about money, why not tell yourself a story in which you are happier for having it? Seth points out that, for the most part, there are not these magical humans who only create winning ideas and solutions to problems. There are simply people who create ideas and ones who do not. Virtually everyone will have a percentage of good ideas and a percentage of bad ideas. One difference between successful and unsuccessful people is unsuccessful people often do not come up with many ideas. They may tell you, "I can't come up with any good ideas." But if you dig deeper, you will find that it is an incomplete statement. The next time someone tells you that, simply respond with, "Tell me about your bad ideas." Rarely will the person have more than a handful, if even that. The complete or more precise statement is not, "I cannot come up with good ideas," but, "I have not come up with many ideas, period." Successful people think of lots of ideas, and a percentage of those will end up being good ideas. Of course, you will ultimately want to be able to distinguish between the better or worse ideas, but initially don't focus on good ideas, just focus on ideas, period. Seth also explains how often people will focus on the negative in a way which is disempowering. Of course, in business, we need to keep track of the problems which need fixing. But in life, it is often a better choice to focus on the positive. Most people will focus on rejection or failure or being lied to or having our heart broken or bad things that happen to us or those we love. Are these really the best things for us to keep track of? Are these things improving or lowering the quality of our life? Instead, it seems like a better option to keep track of the positive things. The times when we were accepted with open arms and succeeded, and good things happened to us and those around us. Wouldn't that put you in a happier, healthier emotional state? Also, we tend to tell ourselves stories when things do not result in the desired outcome. These stories are dangerous because they tend to put the blame on others or outside circumstance. When this is the case, we are unable to improve ourselves for the future. Do your best to not tell yourself these stories and instead learn and grow. Do not accept the cards you're dealt. If you are at a game and things are not going well, go move to another table. Try something new. You have more power than you realize because you have the power to switch tables. So, if things are not going the way you desire, are you going to get up and try a new game? Today, marketing and business ideas can often be unnecessarily overcomplicated with buzzwords, big data, but it does not have to be complicated for you. If you want to know if you have a good idea, all you must do is tell 10 people. 10 people who already know and like you. If you show or share this product or service with 10 people who already trust you, and some of them don't turn around and start using it and sharing it with their social media following, it's not a good enough of an idea. You need an idea that people are willing to share. So if 10 of your close friends and colleagues won't share it, neither will random people. In the same spirit of simplifying processes and starting small, Seth suggests to start with the smallest possible step. Of course, it is great to want to eventually accomplish something massive and great, but you cannot start with that. Therefore, most people never get started. They make initial demands which are so large they are nearly impossible to hit from a static start. In this way, the grand goals feel safer to people because it is easy to put them off and justify reasons for doing so. I don't have the money. I don't have the resources. I don't have the knowledge. I don't have the time. I don't have the experience. These people will delay their life away while never accomplishing their big goal. So start small, smaller than small. Find the smallest end you can get to and focus on that. Now you can't have excuses because you can achieve that little tiny goal right now in your current situation. After accomplishing that first step, take a second and a third and grow with time. Carve out a small market for yourself and dominate that market before expanding to a larger one. Seth also makes a note on raising children. Most people raise children to be obedient, even though obedience is not what creates a successful adult. The clear majority of the world is obedient, and they compete for scraps thrown out by the leaders. His logic is simple. You cannot out-obedience other people to attain success. Therefore, you must out-lead others. If success is the goal, which is not for everyone, but if that is the goal, then it would seem logical to raise our children to be leaders and expert problem solvers. Seth enjoys listening to audiobooks, and two of his favorites are goals, setting and achieving them on schedule, as well as How to Stay Motivated, both by Zig Ziglar. James Altucher. James Altucher is a hedge fund manager and serial entrepreneur, having started over 20 companies. He is also an author, having written 17 books. James, unlike some other authors, asks himself what he is struggling most with and then writes about that. He does not want to put on the persona of perfection. He writes about his struggles, and his readers love him for it. Having started over 20 companies, James is a man who can create ideas, and like Seth Godin previously pointed out about successful people, they aren't all winners. In fact, 17 of his companies have resulted in failure, but three strong successes have netted him tens of millions of dollars. But James does not merely hope these ideas will pop up. He trains his creativity. Every day, James wakes up and writes down 10 ideas, and if he can't come up with 10 ideas, he increases the number to 20. It seems counterintuitive, but his logic is rational. The reason people cannot come up with one idea is because they know that one idea must be perfect, so the first few thoughts that crawl into the mind are immediately shut down, and that halts creativity. When you up that number to 10 ideas, your brain realizes they are not all going to be winners. From a practicality standpoint, that is impossible. You are only going to select one idea, so by default, the other 9 are going to be imperfect. Your brain does not differentiate much between a little imperfect and a lot imperfect, but it does differentiate between perfect and imperfect. As soon as you give your mind permission to be imperfect, your creative juices will start flowing because you will be less harsh and critical of yourself. You do need to think of 10 of these ideas after all. So, what happens when you still can't think of any? Simple. Up it to 20, and now your brain really knows most of these are going to be complete junk. That's what you are looking for. You are looking to free your mind of your own self-critical talk. Attempting to form a perfect idea will ruin it before it ever even begins to form. The only way to override this is to allow yourself to come up with a bunch of bad ideas, and that is accomplished by forcing yourself to come up with many ideas. James applies this concept to all areas of his life. He does not merely write down business ideas. One morning, he will write 10 podcast ideas, the next day 10 blog posts, which could be expanded into interesting books, the next day 10 ways he could save some time each day, the next day 10 ideas he could send to others to help them in their venture. The point of this exercise is less the topic and more the process of producing creativity on demand. Damon John. Damon John is a high-profile entrepreneur due to his involvement on the incredibly successful Shark Tank. Damon founded FUBU, which he grew into a $6 billion brand. Here are a few notes from Damon. Sales are facts. You can have an opinion you want about your business and its potential, but you cannot make up facts. Those are real. Sales tells the truth. And sales is the end-all be-all cure to any problem in your company. Every weekday, Damon reads his goals twice a day. He reads his goals when he wakes up, and he reads them when he goes to bed. He typically keeps around 10 goals with various time frames in various areas of life. Damon is a fierce competitor. He does not care if you are friends or family. When it comes to competition, he is all about winning. Two of his favorite books are Think and Grow Rich and Invisible Selling Machine. Peter Diamandis. Peter Diamandis is a decamillionaire and founder of the XPRIZE Foundation, which was, of course, responsible for putting on the competition which led to the first private spaceflight in history. He has also founded Planetary Resources, which is a company intending to mine asteroids, and Aid Human Longevity, Incorporated, which is aiming to extend the human lifespan. Peter is one of those people who think so big and then actually go on to accomplish such massive things that you will more likely than not be left wondering why you are wasting away your life and not doing more. Peter is not necessarily directly focused on making himself millions or billions of dollars. Instead, Peter is a man who genuinely wants to move humanity forward. He wants both to do things which had never been done before and to do old things better than ever before. Peter believes, despite most people seeing a problem as a horrible thing, he sees a problem as an opportunity. The larger the problem, the bigger the opportunity to both make money and make a difference in this world. When you think as large as Peter does, most people are going to think you are crazy, and that is okay. It just means you're thinking bigger than everyone else. When 99% of the world doubts your idea, it means one of two things. Either your idea is extremely stupid, and everyone knows it but you, or you are about to change the world. Peter believes if you truly want to succeed, it may be necessary to burn your ships. If you have a backup plan, you may be tempted to access it when things go wrong. But if you have nowhere else to turn, nothing else you can do, then you have no option but to keep pushing. Peter begins his mornings with a shower and stretching while breathing deeply and reciting various mantras to himself. Every evening before bed, Peter will ask himself what three wins he had that day. He also found there to be an interesting and strong correlation between those who live longer and those who floss. He openly admits this is likely correlation as opposed to causation, but it is still interesting to ask, what type of person flosses, and how would that lifestyle result in slowing down the aging process? When Peter faces challenges which get him emotionally down, he goes back to the basics and asks himself why he is doing what he is attempting to do. Why is it important? He also uses the sunk cost fallacy to his advantage. He will remind himself of everything he has already done to get where he is now in the process, and how hard he had to work to get here, and how all of that would be wasted if he quit. Remember, the fear of loss can sometimes be a greater motivator than the desire to attain. So if you are getting down, remind yourself of everything you will lose if things do not go as planned. Peter believes that, in a bit of a paradox, doing things 10 times bigger is often easier than doing things 10% bigger. If you are trying to create something 10% better, you often are using the exact same or close to the same technology and thinking to solve the problem. And even if you do solve the problem, usually a 10% incremental improvement is not good enough to take down the established competition. If you are trying to do something like produce the first private sector human spaceflight or mine asteroids, you don't have a lot of competition. You are out there all by yourself, and if you can succeed, you reap all the rewards. Not only is there less competition, but it requires you to think in a completely new way. You simply cannot use the same current way of thinking to truly reach an order of magnitude change. You must throw out the playbook and start over from scratch. This is often more work, but perhaps only 2 or 3 times as much work as opposed to creating a 10% better product or service, and yet with that little more work, you can potentially earn hundreds of times more because you can truly take over the market completely. Here are a few beliefs Peter holds. If you have a choice between 2 options, take them both. If you must compromise, compromise for more. If you are going to lose, you need to change the rules. Every breakthrough, which is now commonplace in today's world, was a crazy idea the day before it happened. You cannot improve what you cannot measure. This concludes the interview portion of the wealth section. Next is Tim's thoughts on wealth. Tim on productivity. Tim then dives into a few productivity tips and gives a quick review of his average day. Tim says while some other people may view him as some crazy, hyper-productive superperson, he is not. He is human and he has flaws. In 2013, despite his monstrous success, he had a few months that went particularly poorly. He overslept by a few hours each day, avoiding life. Then, when he did finally get up, instead of working, he watched online videos of the adult entertainment kind when he knew he had important business to do. He had thoughts of leaving his current life and moving to Iceland just so he could get away from the pressure. It got so bad, he even went to a therapist. His energy levels were so bad, he increased his caffeine consumption to dangerous levels that brought his resting heart rate to over 120 beats per minute. However, following this horrible period, Tim turned things around and bought a new house, started meditating daily, cut his caffeine consumption, closed the deal for his TV show, The Tim Ferriss Experiment, added 20 pounds of muscle, and remembered that he is human, and he will have rough patches. The important thing is to not allow a period of unproductivity and suffering to prevent future success and happiness. He says that these people we think of as superheroes are not what we think they are. They are not perfect. They have many issues, but can push past them and are successful not because of, but despite their limitations. Here are a few things Tim recommends to help get you out of a bad rut. 1. Wake up early. Try to get up an hour earlier than you need to give yourself some time to adjust to and prepare for the day. 2. Have a cup of tea. 3. Make a list of the 3 to 5 primary things that are causing you stress. Often, the more stressful or uncomfortable you feel about it, the more important it is for you to take care of it. 4. If they are not already, turn those issues into actionable items, things you can do to solve or begin to solve the problem. Then, go through that list and ask yourself, if I only accomplish this one thing today, would I be happy with the day? 5. Put the yes tasks at the top of your to-do list and then choose your number one priority for the day. 6. Take 2 to 3 hours to dedicate to your number one priority. Let the other tasks fall into the background, at least for those few hours. Allow yourself to dedicate fully to that vital task for a few hours. 7. If you are having a hard time getting started and are procrastinating, do not allow yourself to slip into a negative state of mind. Stay positive and put yourself back on course. Remember to focus on that one primary goal for the day. Remember, if you have 10 to-dos that day, you will likely accomplish nothing of significance. If you have one single laser focus, you give yourself a chance. If you can do this, you too can appear to be superhuman. Tim also notes that for most people, being busy is just another form of avoidance. Most people know they have 1 or 2 vital things that need to get done, but they will fill their day with irrelevant junk. They will have a long to-do list, and they will go through the day running, checking off the list, but never ever doing anything of significance. For most people, if they were to fully focus and dedicate themselves for a mere 2 to 3 hours to their highest priority goal, they would accomplish vastly more than these people who run around all day being busy, doing nothing. And when things are still looking down and you think you are losing, remember, your heroes aren't as great as you think they are, and you are not as bad as you think you are. You can achieve what they can achieve, even with your imperfections, so refocus and set out to achieve your number one priority. Tim on real-life experience. Tim Ferriss then goes into how to create MBA-like knowledge in real life. Tim talks about how he is fond of the idea of going to attain an MBA. However, sometimes 2 years of real-life experience is more effective than 2 years of theoretical experience. Tim also points out that there are a few things which simply cannot be earned in a theoretical environment. For example, you can read all the books you want and take all the courses you want on investing, but you will never truly learn your risk tolerance until it is time for you to put your own hard-earned dollars on the line. Of course, the basic concept is simple. A low-risk, low-reward investment will yield a small but typically positive return. As you continue to increase the risk, your potential results begin to expand, and at the highest levels of risk, your expected results are extremely polar, with complete loss of investment being by far the most likely outcome. But when you do win, you win big. Think of playing the lottery. From a statistical standpoint, the lottery is one of the riskiest investments you can make. You are extremely likely to lose your investment, but when you win big. You can learn this concept in 2 minutes in a textbook. And let's be honest, you have probably understood this concept at least since your early teenage years. But no matter how much you study, a book can never teach you your own risk tolerance. Only experience can. That is not to say there is not important information in an MBA course, because for sure there is. It should simply be noted that there are some things which can only be learned through doing. Like most information gathering in your life, where you get your information from is vital. Not all MBAs are created equal. Tim points out that while he has learned from some teachers who have real-world experience in venture capital and are more than worthwhile, he has also learned from other teachers who have never actually done anything in the real world. They learn from theoretical teachers with no real experience, and then go on to teach themselves theoretical principles which they or their teachers have never actually tested in battle. While some of these teachers are still good, others are far less valuable than going out and starting a business. Tim recalls one class where he listened to a teacher explain complex mathematical equations for 45 minutes, which in end basically said if your product sucks, no one is going to buy it. Of course, this makes common sense, and Tim didn't need that basic truth to be broken down mathematically. The only math equation you need to know is one bad product equals $0. While Tim sat in on a few classes, he ultimately decided real-life experience would do him better. His logic was sound. Attending Stanford Graduate School of Business, which is the school he wished to attend, is not cheap, about $60,000 per year. For a 2-year MBA, that brings his cost to $120,000. So, he could spend the money on that, or he could go out into the real world and angel invest $120,000 over a 2-year period in $10,000 to $20,000 increments, meaning he would get to invest real money, and his personal hard-earned real money no less in 6 to 12 companies, and then learned and grow with these companies. Here is the interesting part. Even if he were to invest in 10 companies, and he lost his complete investment in every single one of them, he didn't lose any money because he would have been guaranteed to have lost that money attending Stanford GSB. Therefore, in the absolute worst-case scenario where he loses every single penny, he breaks even, but attains one heck of a real-world education in angel investing. Plus, there is an upside. While he is 100% guaranteed to lose all the money attending school, he has a chance to make money, or at least not lose all the money in his investments. With this thought process, he decided real-life experience with a potential upside was the better route. There is a bit of a paradox at play here. This does not apply to everyone, but does apply to a percentage of those who attend business school. If a person can start a business now, which everyone does, and the desire to do so, which not everyone does, but they instead choose to go to business school, what they are really saying is the risk of starting a business now is too great for their personal risk tolerance. So, they go to business school for 2 years and learn information, but information will only do so much. It may slightly lower their perception of risk for starting a business, but at the end of the day, their risk tolerance is unchanged. Most business school graduates do not end up starting their own business. Per Fortune, only 7% of Wharton graduates go on to start a business, and only 18% of Stanford GSB graduates go on to start a business. Again, many people go to business school without the intention of starting a business, but it does go to show that just because you go to business school does not mean you will start a successful company or any company at all. Again, there are some things which only experience can teach. While Tim already had enough intelligence to put together a sound investment strategy, the first thing he did was let his emotions get the best of him and invest $50,000, or about 42% of his entire two-year bankroll, in his very first startup, despite being warned by ultra-successful investors about allocating that high of a percentage of his portfolio into one company. About 2 years later, that 50 grand was gone. That is not a mistake Tim made twice, and that is how you learn bankroll management. After his 2 years of real-life investing school, here are some lessons he learned, most of which apply most of the time. If you have set forth logical rules, follow them. This may seem like common sense, but if a man as intelligent as Tim can falter here, so can most people. If there is one founder for the business, it is generally preferred for the founder to be more of a technician engineer as opposed to a business person. Invest in products you want to use. While you may miss a few great opportunities, you are less likely to make a misstep if you are interested in using the product or service yourself. Pay extra attention to companies which you can help yourself. For Tim, this means companies which aim directly at the public, like social media platforms or Uber. Because Tim has a large reach, he can directly increase the company's reach and therefore makes him a more valuable investor and lowers risk. While Tim may be an early investor, he still wants to see a proven record of accomplishment of success. This could be a company with over 100,000 free users or 10,000 paying users. He will also consider companies which are founded by entrepreneurs with a proven record of accomplishment of previous success in startups. He also likes to see strong growth of at least 10% every month. Once Tim started following his own rules, he could have two successful turnarounds within the first two-year learning period, which more than doubled his investment fund. It should be noted the second of these companies was his own company, Brain Quicken. After he observed the sale of the company Daily Burn, he learned enough to where he finally felt comfortable selling his own business. This is part of the benefit to this real-life education. He could observe how these companies grew and succeeded, and how they failed, and even how they were sold. With this new information, he was better able to run his own businesses and ultimately sell off one which he no longer had time for. It should be noted that these were two exits that came to fruition within that two-year period. The reality of venture capitalism is you often need to wait 7 to 10 years before the companies grow large enough to exit. Here are a few other companies Tim could invest in, which you may be familiar with. Twitter, Shopify, Facebook, and Alibaba at $9 per share, which at the time of this writing has increased by more than tenfold. So, ultimately, things ended up working out quite well. As of the time of this writing, Tim has had about a dozen total exits as a profit. While investing, your money is great. Investing time is another option. For a man like Tim with a large following and respected reputation, he realized that his name was worth more than the amount of money he had to put up. In the second year of his two-year experiment, he received equity for his time and help with zero capital investment in 70% of his investments, and that became even more dramatic in the last 6 months of the two-year experiment, with him only having to put up one single cash investment. Tim on 1,000 True Fans. Tim then goes into Kevin Kelly's concept of 1,000 True Fans. He is a huge proponent of this idea and states he finds many other successful businessmen share his love for this mindset. 1,000 True Fans, at its core, means to focus on a small group of people and make them extremely happy, and then grow from there, as opposed to attempting to develop loose, weak relationships with many people. Kevin Kelly admits parts of his original essay from 2008 are a bit outdated. So here is his updated version of 1,000 True Fans. To be successful, it is unnecessary to focus on millions. Millions of dollars are not needed in most cases to start the company, and millions of customers are not needed to support yourself. If you have a job like a musician, app maker, designer, photographer, or craftsperson, you do not need millions of customers. If you can attain 1,000 people who truly love your product or service, you will survive and thrive. But what is a true fan? A true fan is someone who will buy anything and everything you put out. They will purchase your whole line of products or subscribe to your service at its most expensive level. These are not the types of customers who will buy your book and forget about you for a year. They will buy your ebook, and then they will buy the audiobook, and then they will buy a physical copy of the print. These customers love you. They follow you on social media and engage with you. They pay attention to the content you put out and anticipate upcoming products or events. With a few exceptions, 1,000 true fans will not make you rich, but that is not the goal here. The goal is to pass threshold. You want to build something strong enough that it becomes stable and will not break. From this strong foundation of 1,000 true fans, you can secure your financial freedom so you will not go out of business and you can continue to grow. Now, everyone has their own financial needs, but here are some numbers which work for most people. You should aim to attain at least $100 per year from each true fan. This will give you an income of $100,000 per year. It should be noted this is the amount you should net from the customer. So, if you are a recording artist and receive a percentage of the royalties, it is the royalties that should add up to $100 per year, not the amount they spend. This also means that you need to have enough content out. If someone did go and purchase all your content or services, would that give you over $100 per year? What makes this concept work is that 1,000 fans are doable. Anyone can create 1,000 fans if they work hard at it. Millions of fans, however, are a different story. You can't touch millions of people if you do not already have the reach, but you can touch 1,000. You can start from ground zero, and if you can only touch one single new fan a day, you will have your 1,000 true fans in less than 3 years. You can talk with them, interact with them, meet them, maybe even remember their names or something about them. You can build 1,000 genuine relationships when you start with nothing, but to build 1,000,000 true fans when you have nothing is a bit more difficult. Of course, not everyone will be able to earn $100 per customer per year, and some people can earn much more than $100 per customer. Many salespeople, for example, can earn much more than $100 per year from dedicated customers. So in your situation, figure out how much money you can earn from each customer, and then adjust that to what your personal income situation is. You may need $200,000 to comfortably get by, while others may only need $50,000. The point is to figure out what is the minimum you need to do to create a self-sustaining business where you are not constantly wondering if you are going to have to shut down the business due to lack of income. In reality, of course, you will have other customers, customers who do not qualify as true fans, but are still fans nonetheless, and perhaps spend 20% of what a true fan might spend. These individuals will help grow your income, but it is still important to focus on your super fans because that is how you grow your business. It is your super fans that are more likely to tell all their friends about you and bring others into your circle. Casual fans may purchase here and there, but are less likely to tell anyone about you. For this reason, it still makes sense to focus on the smaller percentage of customers who are your superfans. Think of it this way. True fans are not only your foundational source of income, they are also your marketing team. They bring others into your pipeline. It should be noted that attempting to create 1,000 true fans does not exclude the attempt for mainstream success. You may delegate some of your time to developing a few deep relationships with your best customers and then delegating other time to win over larger audiences. Remember, 1,000 true fans is not to be taken too literally. It is a state of mind where you appreciate individual relationships with your best customers who will provide the foundation for you to grow off. Tim on saying no. Tim then goes on to explain his methods on how you can say no and why it is important to do so. Although Tim admits startup investing was the most lucrative activity he could perform, he still found it necessary to say no. In your life, you may have an activity which may seem important or feel like it is something you must do, but after thinking about it, perhaps you will realize that you could be doing something else even more important. Here are a few of Tim's general thoughts on investing and how he ultimately decided to take a break from it. Tim acknowledges that although he has many rules put in place for his life, there are typically exceptions to these rules. Rules may be simple or may be complex, although he finds often the simpler and more clear the rule, the better it works. One investor may have one set of rules, and another investor may have an opposite set of rules, and both investors can be extremely successful. Although Tim prefers to be able to obtain a 10x return on most of his investments, he also sometimes does the opposite with investments in more established and safer startups which need cash and will probably only yield a doubling to quadrupling of investment. As Tim gained increasing success as an investor, he felt the pressure to allocate increasingly of his time to it, as that was where he could get the best monetary return on his time. But as he spent more time on it, he had less time for some of his core passions, like writing. He was having a difficult time dividing his time and energy between venture capitalism and managing his other projects. He felt a bifurcation was on the horizon. Either he would put his other projects on the back burner and focus full-time on investing, or he would put investing on the back burner and refocus on his other interests. Tim knew he wanted to focus more on his passions, but the analytical side of his mind simply could not rationalize away the money he would be missing, particularly because the potential for him to make this kind of money in venture capitalism may not always be there. He can always go back and write a book, but he may not be able to make money as easily in 10 years, depending on how the economy is doing. So, what do you do? He explained his dilemma to a friend who spoke from the heart. Tim has a genuine impact on his audience as an author. He has changed people's lives financially, physically, and in many other ways. He has given people the courage to leave the rat race and follow their dreams. As an author, Tim is irreplaceable. As an investor howler, Tim is just money and publicity. A company is not going to succeed or fail because of Tim, and a company worth investing in will be able to find another investor. Writing is where Tim can make a difference in this world. Tim, of course, does not believe himself to be some writing demagogue, but this conversation stuck with him. It was true. Writing is truly where he could have the most impact on the most amount of people. Like Peter Diamandis, who could be worth much more than $10 million if he was only focused on growing his bank account, so too could Tim make more money in venture capitalism. But both want to do more than just make money. They want to make a difference in this world, and that does not always mean doing the thing that makes you the most amount of money. Tim recalls his conversation with Derek Sivers. If you are not saying, hell yes, then that is a no. Tim wanted to write. Investing was not a hell yes anymore. Tim remembers earlier in his career when he would say yes to everything because he didn't have a lot going on. He had free time. But when, after achieving success, things change. You need to play defense with your time, and most of those yeses need to turn into noes. Once you attain a moderate level of success and respectability, it is not a lack of opportunity which will hinder you. It is a lack of the ability to say no, even if that is to yourself. You can do everything you want to do. You just can't do everything right now. To say yes, you need to say no. Tim ultimately decided it was time for him to get back to his true passion, writing. Sometimes blessings become burdens. In the beginning, Tim had to go out of his way to find startups to invest in. The process was not eating away his entire day. As he started gaining a name for himself in the industry, he didn't have to look out for deals anymore. They started coming to him. This, of course, is a good thing. However, as time went on, he became flooded with inbound inquiries. Too many to sift through, and it was taking too much time. What was once a blessing had now become a burden and was affecting his ability to focus on other tasks. Tim initially got into investing to allocate his financial resources in a way which would improve the overall satisfaction and quality of his life long term. He was willing to accept, say, a 10% decrease in current life quality to receive a 10 times financial return down the line. However, as time moved on, this decrease in current life quality became high and higher, even if the financial returns were increasing as well. He had to ask himself if investing was improving the overall quality of his life anymore. Is the future potential gain outweighing the massive amount of immediate pain? At a certain point, the answer to this became no. Of course, some people will simply ask why Tim didn't cut back on his lucrative investing as opposed to cutting it all out. The answer to this is simple. Tim is not good at moderation, and he never has been. Tim is a man who is all in or all out. Some people will then follow up with, well, why don't you work on your moderation issue? This is a valid question. Let us analyze the issue. You cannot focus on more than one thing at once, so you have two options. You can either focus on becoming a bit less crappy at moderation and do an average at best job at it, or he can focus on what he is really excellent at and plunge face forward into his next project. Essentially, he can either work on his weaknesses or work on his strengths. In most, but not all situations, it is a better decision to become better at what you are already good at. If you can be excellent at one single thing, you will be all but guaranteed success. If you can be average at 100 things, you will be all but guaranteed mediocrity. So, while saying, why don't you just do one deal a month may sound nice, it simply is unreasonable for Tim. He knows himself, and he knows he has an all-or-nothing mentality. In addition to this, there are obvious logic flaws in this self-imposed limit. If on day one of the month you find a great company to invest in, are you just going to ignore another great investment opportunity? Are you going to tell an equally desirable startup, I'm sorry, today is the 27th of the month and I've already done my investing. Come back in 5 days? Or if you don't find anything worth investing in for a month, are you going to limit yourself to one the next month or double down on two? Also, not only the best startups come your way. Whether you decide to invest in one or five companies, you still need to sift through the same amount of inbound traffic. It is the same amount of work. The only thing that changes are the number of businesses you write a check for. So, are you saving time or doing the same amount of work but capping your income potential? The reality of the situation is not as black and white as it may appear at first glance. The only true way to mentally get away from investing, at least for Tim, was to stop cold turkey. In typical Tim Ferriss fashion, he designed an experiment. Instead of making an indefinite decision to continue or stop doing startups, he decided to enact a 2-week test. He put in place a few restrictions and made the decision to decline every startup offer for a 2-week period, no matter how good the offer seemed. This would give him a much-needed mental break from startups and some time to write. At the end of the 2 weeks, he can evaluate how things went and make a more educated and clear decision. After the 2 weeks, Tim was happier and less stressed to be writing again and decided to take an indefinite break from startups. Section 3. Wise. B.J. Miller. B.J. Miller is a physician working with the University of California and the Zen Hospice Project. He has learned much about life through his involvement with physician-assisted suicide. B.J. finds that seemingly small and insignificant things can make a difference on a person's well-being. If you are in a tough place, if you are depressed and down on your luck, just take a few moments to go outside and look up at the stars. Note, this might be a little bit harder if you live in a city like Los Angeles. Often taking a few moments to simply stare into the heavens will yield the same results for most people. They stop thinking about their own problems, if only for a moment, and start thinking about the universe. What is the purpose of all this? What is the purpose of life? How did this all come to be? The night sky is a breathtaking and mind-altering sight which few people take advantage of. When B.J. was in college, he was in an accident which landed him in the burn unit with a severely burned body and 3 amputated limbs. He recalls the torture, not only of the pain, but of being isolated from the world. In a burn unit, infections are a major issue, so human contact is extremely limited. You don't realize just how important human contact and simple things are until you have been isolated from people and sunshine and nature for many weeks. After about 2 months of isolation, one of the nurses snuck in a snowball. B.J. wasn't even aware it was snowing. This was the first contact he had with nature, with the outside world, in all this time. This moment of pure bliss simply from touching snow and slowly watching it melt away has stayed with him all of his life. Often, when we are down and depressed, we are in one way or another isolated from the world around us and we need to reconnect. B.J. has carried this concept of simplicity into his work in the hospice. Often, the best help he can offer to a patient is nothing other than being an empathetic listener, and when someone is facing death's door, sometimes instead of having this massive existential conversation, he will just bake cookies with them. Doing a simple task like this will remind them that they can still have pleasure today. They can still enjoy life right at this very moment. Maria Popova. Maria Popova is a writer with several million readers following her Brain Pickings weekly email. She is focused on protecting her passion, which is her writing. When she started developing a name for herself as a writer, she began receiving many media inquiries. CNN might ask her to do a 2-minute guest spot, and that, of course, sounds fantastic. But with preparation, travel, and dealing with coordination, it may eat up most of your day. In addition to that, for a moderate period before and after the process, your mind will not be focused properly on the very thing that got you there in the first place, writing. It will be distracted with thinking about the guest spot. You may lose an entire day's worth of work, and that may not be acceptable. So, before you say yes, make sure that yes is not taking away from what got you there in the first place. Maria personally enjoys Henry David Thoreau's diaries. She feels that he can capture where the reality of the outer world and the perception of your inner world collide. She was then reminded of a bit of Thoreau's writing. The really efficient laborer will be found not to crowd his day with work, but will saunter to his task surrounded by a wide halo of ease and leisure. There will be a wide margin for relation to his day. He is only earnest to secure the kernels of time and does not exaggerate the value of the husk. Those who work much do not work hard. A wonderful metaphor for not mistaking our husk or outer appearance of busyness with the true value of the seed, which is the actual significant work we accomplish. Jocko Willink. Jocko is a former U.S. Navy SEAL, having commanded the decorated SEAL Team 3 and later running training operations for the West Coast SEAL Team. He is also a best-selling author and jiu-jitsu black belt. Jocko has a mantra he lives by. Discipline equals freedom. Regardless of what you desire in life, money, time, health, or almost anything else, the only thing which will get you there is discipline. Without discipline, financial freedom will never occur. Without discipline, a healthy and fit body will never form. Before you have what you want, you must have discipline. There is an expression used among SEALs, two is one and one is none. This references things going wrong. Equipment will break or malfunction. Plans will fail. Obviously, not everything can be backed up, but if you can afford a backup, do it. You want to avoid failure due to a single weak point which could be prevented. Think of it like this. Your life is a car, and you are driving along, and everything's going well, and then you run out of gas. It doesn't matter if you're driving a $2,000 beater or a $200,000 supercar. If you run out of gas, that single inflection point will bring a dramatic and quick halt to your vehicle. Just like how a gallon of gas, which costs a couple of bucks, can stop a $100,000 car, there are little things which you could have accounted for or backed up but did not, and that results in a half of your productivity or life. Have you ever left the house in the morning and forgot to bring or pick up any food? A few hours later, you are miserable at work. Or if you are a heavy caffeine user, you find yourself in a situation where you do not have access to caffeine. What happens? Irritability goes up, energy and productivity goes down. Now, how hard would it be to keep a few granola bars by the door or in the car or at work, or to keep a few caffeine pills in the glove compartment? Now, you may be thinking these are minor things, and that is the entire point. These are minor things which should never create any lull in productivity. Of course, you can still work on an empty stomach or without caffeine, but if that creates a 15% decline in your performance for a few hours, that is unacceptable. It may seem like a minor price to pay, but that is a sign that you do not value your work enough. You should be doing something you love and where you want to perform at your absolute peak. So, every single time one of these little small issues comes up where it distracts you from your ability to work with 100% focus and productivity, see if it's something you can spend 2 minutes to set up a backup so it doesn't happen again. Having been in special operations, Jocko has experienced some quite gruesome events. Jocko believes this, however, is what gives him the grateful attitude he has. He knows how bad things can get, so he appreciates and is thankful for every beautiful day and every smile he sees. Jocko rises at 4:45 a.m. each morning. He likes to feel he gets started earlier than the enemy and the competition. Because he believes this gives him an advantage, it does, and he starts out the day with a strong psychological win. Jocko also believes in the power of being able to detach yourself from your environment. In battle, it is easy to get caught up in the situation and have a difficult time thinking clearly. All you can see is what is right in front of you. You cannot detach yourself from your immediate perspective to view the situation and set the right course of action. This is what you need to be able to do. When you get into a stressful situation in business, personal relationships, financial or other, you need to be able to rationally view the situation. Only then can you make the best decision. Brian Koppelman. Brian Koppelman is a successful screenwriter and producer. He co-created the show Billions and co-wrote Ocean's 13, Rounders, and served as a producer on The Illusionist. Brian has one strong and simple belief he lives his life by. Time does not magically appear. You must make it. Brian was working a day job and had a family. He was 30 years old and unhappy with his mediocre life. He came up with an idea which sparked his interest, a movie about underground poker games in New York City. There was only one problem. He was no longer a 21-year-old kid with no responsibilities. So, what do you do when you have no time? You make it. He woke up a little over 2 hours early, 6 days a week, to write on his screenplay. He would think about it all day long and think about it before bed. Then he would power through as much as he could for 2 hours every morning. He did this month after month, and eventually he sold his script, Rounders. That was the changing point in his life. He was eventually able to leave his day job and work in the movie business full time. So even if you have a family and you're not a spring chicken anymore, you too can still sit down one day and say, enough is enough. Today is the day